Jay Mariotti here, and let's appreciate these soccer rock stars for who they are. They are the most dynamic and resonant women's sports team in U.S. history, badasses to the very core, with Megan Rapinoe leaving the everlasting post-goal pose that symbolized so much more than scoring goals and winning a World Cup. She also slammed the President of the United States, took names, and made us all think about life in one quintessentially American swarm. And I do expect Rapinoe to endure in our culture for some time. She and her teammates backed up their brash statements and feisty play with another title while providing lessons for young women in how to demand equality here in the 21st century. You heard the chants, equal pay, and hell, as I've often said here on this podcast, these champions deserve not only the same wages as the long-struggling and often abysmal U.S. men's initiative, they deserve more pay, much more pay, based on the success, popularity, TV ratings, and total revenue they have generated. And while the U.S. Soccer Federation will defend itself in a class action lawsuit with twisted proof of fair financial treatment, here's the rub, the truth. There remains a massive gap between men's and women's World Cup bonuses for the U.S. teams when the women are actually winning the championships and the men are stinking it up. That said, where I do have to put up a roadblock today is when this team is used as a political weapon in these explosive times in America. That's when sports becomes social warfare, and that is where I draw my line on this very podcast, known as Unmuted.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
To be clear, I'm not telling anybody to stick to sports today. No, I'm telling all guilty parties, and you know who you are, to stop exploiting sports for political and activism gain. Global athletic achievements should be treated as such, a national team proving supremacy over competitors who are improving in this sport, women's soccer, but still aren't ready to topple the USA dynasty. But these victories never should be used in this divided country as a rallying missile for, say, a 2020 presidential agenda. When the face of this team, Rapinoe, ripped President Trump and said she would not go to the bleeping White House while using her platform to protest social and racial injustice and celebrating her openly gay status, she was expressing her opinion, just as she was voicing her view when she quoted the slain rapper Nipsey Hussle in a celebratory post. However, in the aftermath of the conquest in France, we are seeing swarms of agendas globbing onto Rapinoe and her brassy teammates as a hammer against the sitting president in the White House. We're seeing the Democrats seizing an opportunity. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, one of the party's many 2020 candidates, immediately announced that ticker tape parade down the Canyon of Heroes from the Battery to City Hall. And just as annoyingly, the anti-Trump media, the New York Times and the Washington Post included, are latching on to Rapinoe and this team and overplaying the victory to outsized proportions, with one writer actually calling this the greatest of all American sports triumphs ever. All of American sports. And why would that be? Oh, simply because, in the writer's opinion, Rapinoe and teammate Ali Krieger, who condemned Trump as somebody who is angered when he can't control or grope women, have chosen to publicly excoriate the president. In that sense, the soccer players are being used as accomplices in a political mission, which is not why they are a special sports team. Look, I don't really care what a soccer player thinks of Trump, and I certainly do not care what some sports writer thinks of Trump. I admire this team because the players loved each other, were united as one, said what they felt, answered questions without fear, and backed up their strut by winning it all. Trump went ahead and sent out his congratulatory tweet, and then he committed his own blunder by saying, I'll look at it, whether to invite them to the White House. Does he not remember that he invited this team last week, win or lose? You know, how juvenile. Just invite them, Donald, as you would any other team, and let them decide. And I think we know what the answer is, but he should appreciate that. After all, he ripped Rapinoe, and you know how this went, and they won, so he should at least smile and know that they made America look great again, right? And if they refuse, as the Golden State Warriors and others have, so be it. This is America, and this is a uniquely American team in 2019 that should not be squeezed by the politicians and the media for leverage. Let them be. Find your own crusade. Do not latch onto theirs. Here was Rapinoe, whose takeover of the World Cup off the field became more powerful because of her performance on the field, calling on the U.S. Soccer Federation to do the obvious, pay up or perhaps prepare to lose in court with the USWNT lawsuit against the Federation, never looking stronger than it does right now.
I don't even know how to answer that question, but I think there needs to be a big investment made in the women's game. So maybe for once, like, God forbid we be overpaid. Maybe that could just happen like one time, and then we'll see how it goes from there.
Megan, did you hear the crowd chanting equal pay, equal pay?
A little bit, yeah. It was right at the end, right? Definitely heard that as we were kind of lining up on this. I think it's just everybody's ready for it. Everybody wants it. Everybody's ready for the conversation to be moved to the next piece. And to have something like that, and, you know, obviously in the biggest match that went so far beyond anything sport, was pretty incredible.
So waiting for you is the equal pay lawsuit. Yeah. How do you think winning sort of changes the dimension of that?
Well, it's not good for them, is it? I think... obviously, it's huge. I think we've been a little shy to say that, you know, putting so much pressure on ourselves, because I think we have a case no matter what. Obviously, we brought the lawsuit, but this just, you know, sort of blows it out of the water. It's like, is it even about that anymore? Is it just kind of about doing the right thing? I think the Federation is in a unique position to, you know, kind of ride this wave of good fortune and get on board and hopefully set things right for the future.
And the American men's team, arrogant as it was for the Gold Cup to insist on staging its title game only hours after the women's final in France, the American men lost to Mexico, of course, 1-0 in what hardly was a global event. Still, here's the problem in the bigger picture. Because the Men's World Cup is the biggest sports event on the planet, it's still unreasonable to expect FIFA to bridge the gap between genders, at least for now. It's going to take a lot of time in that sense. I'm not talking about the American Federation. I'm talking about FIFA because of the magnitude of the Men's World Cup. The men received a total of $400 million in prize money last year compared to only $30 million for the women. And I know I'm hearing the screams, but you know what? You have to consider, again, the magnitude, the monstrosity that is the World Cup and all the money pouring into it. That's how those decisions are made. FIFA, though, has pledged to continue funding and growing women's soccer around the world, which is why this particular World Cup was the most competitive yet. Unfortunately, we've seen no evidence that a women's soccer league in America will resonate after the World Cup. The same problem that Olympic athletes often have in sports that achieve mass popularity only once every 4 years, and then the athletes disappear. Lasting impact is still elusive for this sport. I mean, what happens after the ESPY Awards and the SI swimsuit issue have been consumed? For now, each U.S. women's player will receive about $250,000 for winning the World Cup, whereas France's men's team split $38 million for winning the men's tournament. I'll be curious to see if Rapinoe will be offered marketing opportunities when American companies have yet to pour big money into gay athletes, which does go a long way toward explaining why no male in the four major American pro sports is out at the moment. The other prominent American star, Alex Morgan, is not gay. Now, remember Alex's tea-sipping celebration after scoring against England and the subsequent criticism of Alex Morgan? Well, she also fired back.
I feel that there is some sort of double standard in for females in sports to feel like we, you know, have to be humble in our successes and have to celebrate but not too much and have to, you know, do something, but it always has to be in a limited fashion. And you see men celebrating all around the world in big tournaments, you know, grabbing their sacks or whatever it is. And when I look at sipping a cup of tea, I'm a little taken aback and kind of you have to laugh about it to see all the criticism.
Now, let's see if the men keep holding their sacks when it comes to offering endorsements to the team of the year so far in American sports. 15.6 million viewers on a summer Sunday afternoon pretty much says it all. No, we're not going to see equality on the global level in soccer. But in the American context, damn right, these women should be paid more than these men who can't perform on the global level and didn't even qualify for the World Cup a year ago in Russia. I say for now, give the women all the money! And as the shock wears off from a most unlikely collaboration, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and the long-ridiculed, now-regal L.A. Clippers, the biggest surprise is how the notoriously quiet Leonard was quite the beastly salesman in recruiting his superstar partner, George. Let's revisit this because it's a new chapter in NBA history that could result in a championship. Leonard told the Clippers all along that he did want to join them, but he needed a golden sidekick. And according to NBA tampering rules, or what is left of them, the Clippers could not help in the recruiting process. So Kawhi had to get on the horn by himself and start calling people. Kawhi Leonard, the guy who sits there and goes, and doesn't say much at a press conference. Yeah, he's picking up the phone. Hey, Jimmy Butler, you want to play with me? Jimmy said, no, I would prefer to be in Miami, which is odd because Jimmy's not going to be winning any titles in Miami, even if Russell Westbrook ends up there with them. Then Kawhi called the rehabbing Kevin Durant, who said, no, I'm selling my place in Malibu, and I prefer to be in Brooklyn with Kyrie Irving while I rehab my torn Achilles in Manhattan with my surgeon. So rather than break down and join the Lakers or stay in Toronto for a short-term deal, Leonard went ahead and made another call to Paul George, who, like Kawhi, grew up on the distant fringes of Los Angeles, was not massively recruited by college teams, and quietly ascended into the NBA player elite without magazine covers or mega hype. When Oklahoma City general manager Sam Presti realized the Thunder were not going anywhere with the Paul George-Westbrook pairing, the Clippers were brought in to create a gigantic trade package, and they did exactly that, making history. Just as the Lakers gave away a ton of talent for Anthony Davis, so did the Clippers, who also were much more impressive than the Lakers in their presentation to Leonard. And this was very important as well. The Clippers, first class these days, invited Kawhi over to Doc Rivers' house in Malibu, joined by the league's richest owner, Steve Ballmer. The players all see Steve there under the basket with his son, cheering, super fan, love his enthusiasm. And then the logo himself, Jerry West, in his 80s, made it to Malibu to pull his magical strings, just as he did for the Warriors in Durant's recruitment when he worked for them, and just as he did for the Lakers back in the day in the recruitment of Shaquille O'Neal and the trade for Kobe Bryant. Jeannie Buss, she foolishly never tried to bring Jerry West back into the fold, allowing him to escape down the hall to the Clippers, who grasped that the logo still has considerable cred in his 80s with young men decades younger. Instead, what did Jeannie do? She was left to meet with Leonard and his advisor, Uncle Dennis Robertson, and his agent, not at her house, but at a suite at a Ritz-Carlton in Westlake Village, the far suburbs, with the dubious general manager, Rob Pelinka. That's it. No closer. Not even the new coach, Frank Vogel, was there. Just Jeannie and Rob. So symbolic of the Lakers' ongoing dysfunction. So now it's an alley war in downtown L.A. Kawhi and Paul George and Nasty Patrick Beverley and Sweet Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Landry Shamet versus the thrown-together Lakers of aging LeBron James with nearly 60,000 career minutes on his body, the monstrous Davis, emerging Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, broken down DeMarcus Cousins, pouting and injury-prone Rajon Rondo, and veterans Avery Bradley, JaVale McGee, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jared Dudley, Quinn Cook, and the bald dude Alex Caruso. There are your L.A. Lakers. What a mishmash. What is this? Whoever could put this team together? Well, geez, let's pull this name out of the hat. You want to throw the dart at the board and see who we hit here? Oh, Quinn Cook. And don't make too much of LeBron starting the season as the point guard. He always has been the facilitator. The ball is in his hands. The ultimate positionless player, LeBron. So that's no big deal. So which team has the advantage in all of this? I'll give the Lakers this. They have depth. But I say the Clippers. Why? Defense, Kawhi, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, three of the very best defenders in the damn league. And Kawhi and Paul George, two top three, top four MVP candidates a year ago. If you had given, I'm Mariotti aside, you know my feeling about postseason awards. Why do we base them on the regular season when we forget about the regular season after the postseason? Kawhi Leonard goes down in time as the MVP of the postseason and the regular season, the entire year. When somebody 50 years from now is looking on the internet or whatever is the internet then and looks to see who defined the 2018-19 season, it was not Giannis Antetokounmpo, it was Kawhi Leonard. That's why that NBA awards ceremony after the finals in Santa Monica was so hollow. It's like we're honoring Mike Budenholzer as coach of the year when Nick Nurse kicked his ass in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's just, why do they have that ceremony? It's so lukewarm. A Mariotti aside. All right, back to Clippers versus Lakers. Why else do the Clips have the advantage? Coaching. The established Rivers versus Frank Vogel, who has to learn how to coach and get to know this mishmash on the fly. Frank Vogel is a defensive guy. Of all those names I read to you, how many of them play defense? And that includes LeBron these days. Who plays D? I'll give you Avery Bradley. Who else plays D? I mean, he's going to go crazy. And then Jason Kidd will be tapping LeBron on the shoulder in midseason saying, hey, I want to be the head coach. Okay, I'll see what I can do. And then, I can't wait for the drama. That's another reason the Clippers have an advantage. No drama, all professionalism, starting with Kawhi, Rivers, Ballmer, Lawrence, Frank, Jerry West, professional. The Lakers. Oh, painful. Drama, kings and queens everywhere. Oh, my Lord. And think about this, too. Recent championship pedigree. Kawhi has won two titles and two finals MVP awards since 2014, beating LeBron that year with the Spurs and chasing him off to Cleveland, while LeBron has won just once in that span and has to stay healthy. The Lakers, as the longtime Lux brand, not only in LA but in the sport, will have all the pressure to win, and they won't be helped by LeBron's moods and demands and the backstabbing of his guy, agent Rich Paul, and trust issues in the front office involving Rob Pelinka and the potential of Kidd gunning for Vogel's job, and surely the usual commentary from Magic Johnson, who already this week says this team should be, quote, almost unbeatable, unquote. Gee, thanks. The Lakers are saying, Magic, gee, you quit on us. Now you're putting the pressure on us. We have to win every game. The Clippers, on the other hand, have little pressure. They are the longtime underdogs trying to take over the world, led by Kawhi, the refreshingly understated superstar who doesn't need social media and TV commercials and Trumpism to take over the sport and try to become the third player to win NBA titles with three different franchises. LeBron is trying to do the same. My money is on Kawhi. There is one setback, though, for Leonard and George. They have been banned from all locations of my favorite coffee chain in L.A., Alfred Coffee, fans of the Lakers, obviously, for signing with the other guys. I think Kawhi and Paul George will get by without Alfred Coffee. So now the Clippers eye a championship. Did I just say that? In a Western Conference that goes 11 deep in playoff-type teams. In my July ranking order, 1 through 8, here it goes. I have Clippers 1, Lakers 2, Nuggets 3, the immensely improved Utah Jazz 4, Trail Blazers 5, Warriors way down at 6, the imploding Rockets at 7, and yes, the Pelicans, assuming Zion Williamson loses weight and stays healthy with that knee issue, as the eighth seed. If not, maybe Sacramento surges into that last spot. As predicted here, though, after strategically laying low for about 2 months, new Kings coach Luke Walton is vehemently denying that he sexually assaulted a former media colleague of his at a Santa Monica hotel back in 2014, vowing to fight the case in court and saying he will not settle. Okay, Luke, if this civil case remains open when the Kings go to camp, Walton's situation could be a major distraction, and you would have to wonder about his future. They cannot go into a season with a coach who has a civil case involving sexual assault hanging over the franchise's heads. In the East, I have Milwaukee as the new favorite, with Philly as the boom-or-bust pressure cooker team, the number two seed, and all eyes are on Coach Brett Brown. Milwaukee got better. They lost Brogdon, but picked up Robin Lopez, kept Brooke Lopez, and added Wesley Matthews. They are better than they were. Giannis will be better than he was in the postseason. I think Milwaukee, you look at the East, there are only two real championship contenders in the East. Toronto isn't anymore. Brooklyn, not without Durant. So, yeah, it's either Milwaukee or Philly, I think, coming out of the East. I'd be surprised if any other team snuck through in the East, with Irving and the Nets waiting on Durant in the fall of 2020. And the Raptors aren't bitter, give them that, knowing they squeezed one title out of a one-year Kawhi rental. Here is Coach Nick Nurse with no hard feelings.
You can't blame a guy for wanting to go home, but that's what he texted me today. I'm going home, you know, and I just said, you've changed a lot of lives, man, by what you accomplished in Toronto, mine especially, and thank him for what he did, and we'll look to the future, and we'll look to do it again. it's certainly disappointing. I think he's, first of all, a great person. He was unbelievably fun to coach, right? I mean, just like locked in and loaded and ready to go. And like I said, was I always said that, you know, people would ask me what it was like coaching him. And I always said the best thing was I got to stand there on the court side and watch this guy go to work, right? And that was something I'll never forget. Now we got to go kick his ass.
You know, think back all these years when we grew tired of the Warriors piling up assets and ruining basketball. Don't you just love the new NBA parity at the top now? Don't have to worry about any dynasties here. I mean, look at all the championship contenders in the West. I would count Clippers, Lakers, Denver, Utah, Portland, and that's it. Not Houston, not Golden State. I would count those five as championship contenders, along with Milwaukee and Philadelphia. That's seven teams that could win it all after years of just wanting to hand a trophy every year to Golden State. Once a business phenomenon, the pair-up is now standard business in a league where players use their power and their entitlement to create these super teams. Even Kawhi Leonard did it, though props to him for not going the easier way, joining LeBron and Anthony Davis, and forming his own behemoth with the team ethic in mind, another plus in these Staples Center dogfights with LeBron. The Clippers are a team. I don't know what the Lakers are. I agree with Stephen A. Smith, by the way. Yeah, as a power duo, LeBron and Davis get a slight edge over Leonard and Paul George. But I'm looking at the totality of these two teams. The Lakers are a mosh pit, and the Clippers know exactly what they are doing in building this team with, I think, more moves to come here. They did have to give up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who will be a star in this league, the veteran Danilo Gallinari, and those five number one picks, but it's worth it. Look at all the positive vibes. Finally, the Clippers, the championship favorites in the NBA. Nobody can deny, by the way, that the players have almost too much power in this July game every summer, reducing the league to a bystander as this fantasy frenzy swirls every single summer. The NBA, after all, created its own monster. Just as LeBron has nobody but himself to blame for launching the super team concept 9 years ago when he took his talents to South Beach. In that vein, it's interesting to hear one voice who is not interested in pairing up. His name, Damian Lillard. He easily could have played out the free agent string and entered this super pool like everybody else when his time was ready. But he preferred to sign a supermax deal in Portland, the small market team, where he can't recruit a glittering sidekick because it's Portland, but he can try to win a title his way. The Blazers did reach the Western Finals without big man Yusef Nurkic, and now Lillard thinks he can inject the Blazers' team-first DNA into the quirky bloodstream of the previously problematic Hassan Whiteside, the wayward Miami troublemaker who can be a steal down low for this team if he does behave and he does conform. Here was Lillard on his aversion to pairing up.
Just for me personally, I'm not a team up type of person. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I've said it in the past, like I would almost just rather, if I'm going to lose trying to do it the way I'm doing it, I can live with that knowing that I really mean that.
Finally, in a league on fire in terms of buzz and popularity, Commissioner Adam Silver must pay heed to competitive integrity amid the furious free agent movement. Teams were not supposed to be negotiating with free agents until 6 p.m. Eastern time on June the 30th, but obviously the Nets knew about Irving and Durant because GM Sean Marks was making deals to clear out cap space before then. And who knows what the Clippers knew and what the Lakers were trying to do in that cutthroat battle for Leonard. Do you think they may have violated rules? In the end, I think Steve Ballmer, Doc Rivers, and Jerry West were the shrewd ones. I think they followed the letter of the NBA law, and I think the Lakers have been the ones tampering and plotting behind the scenes and lying and ultimately looking like clumsy losers again. All of the infighting, they remind me of Wile E. Coyote. You know, the Clippers are beep, beep, the Roadrunner. Kawhi Leonard, beep, beep, the Roadrunner. And I just get the vibe that Rob Pelinka is Wile E. Coyote. And after all the movement, we're still not done with the Thunder rebuilding around Gilgeous Alexander. Russell Westbrook is a man on an island. He doesn't want to stay there. They're not going to be a contender as they rebuild. As his jump shot has abandoned him and he has faded from his MVP dominance of a couple of years ago, Westbrook desperately needs a change of scenery. He is owed a whopping $171 million. Few teams want to take on that risk, especially when he can't hit an open jumper. But here's the team to watch. Miami, where Pat Riley is nearing retirement age, and he's going to take one last stab to escape NBA no man's land. The Heat, right down there where you don't want to be, competing for the eighth spot, not getting there, losing out, finishing ninth. That's the worst place for an NBA team to be. So by pairing Westbrook perhaps with Jimmy Butler, Riley at least can make the playoffs in the East and give that market some long-lost pizzazz. In the loaded West, it's still mind-boggling how quickly the Warriors have fallen down into the glob. I've got them number six. Six! Their dynasty over after three NBA titles and two near misses. They aren't on the level right now of the Clippers, Lakers, Denver, Utah, Portland, but I do like them better than Houston, which could be a disaster area amid general manager Daryl Morey's failed public trade attempts and the precarious job status of coach Mike D'Antoni. You think D'Antoni wants to hang around this mess? I mean, Morey has tried to trade Chris Paul. He did make an effort to get Westbrook. How do you think Chris Paul feels about all this? You want Chris Paul pouting? And they owe him so much money there, and they can't get rid of Chris Paul. I certainly wouldn't dismiss Golden State as a tricky playoff team with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, the emerging Kevon Looney, and eventually Klay Thompson. If those four were back in the playoffs, would you want to play them? And they have been joined, of course, by newcomer D'Angelo Russell, even if he's a 1 or 2 year rental, and big man Willie Cauley Stein. But I do believe Portland, Denver, Utah, these are 50-win type teams. That's why the Golden State looks like a 47-win team, no disgrace, and they'll make the playoffs, and then that's when Klay comes back, and who knows what Steve Kerr and that group might do. But without Durant and Andre Iguodala, the aura is certainly gone, and when Steve Kerr talks about Durant starting to drift during the 2017-18 season when he was starting to play iso ball, installing the Warriors' beautiful motion game, it's pretty clear there were major issues between Durant and Kerr, especially when Houston's physical switching defenses in the West Finals 2 years ago baited Durant into playing one-on-one ball that nearly doomed the Dubs in that series. Durant indeed wanted out all along. He didn't do much to hide it. His body language was clear. Even if it does hurt his chances of ever winning another title, had he come back to Golden State, rehabbed, come back successfully, they may have won again. He's not going to win a championship in Brooklyn. Yeah, you can record that. It was a fine gesture for Warriors owner Joe Lacob to overlook that and say the team will retire Durant's number 35 jersey, though Durant never got over that nasty scene caused by Draymond Green last November when Durant's close friend Irving, having his own issues with teammates in Boston, wanted a collaboration in New York. It came down to the Nets or the Knicks, which was no contest, of course, given the rise of the Sean Marks Nets and the hopeless futility of the James Dolan Knicks. It will be fascinating to watch the Nets rise, first as a playoff team next season, then as a East title contender. Yeah, Eastern contender, not an NBA championship team. Assuming Durant does return in 2020 in productive form after that Achilles rupture. Keep in mind, this is a major financial gamble by the Nets. That's $164 million that Durant will return and resume some form of the old Durant. This while the Knicks continue to embarrass themselves in one of sports' all-time stink fests, adding more poison to the sick fan base, and I don't mean sick in a good way. The Knicks canceled a meeting with Durant because they needed to sign a bunch of average players to fill out the roster. I think they knew he wasn't coming, but still. You know, we're not going to pay you the max anyway, Kevin. We need to sign a bunch of players. They got Julius Randle, a good player, and a bunch of people nobody else really wanted. All right, maybe Bobby Portis. Wow, get your tickets now at the world-famous Madison Square Garden for Julius Randle and Bobby Portis and R.J. Barrett. Wow. Players around the league also took note when Dolan banned Charles Oakley from the Garden. That's why they don't want to go there. They look at Dolan and think, what a creep. Even Terry Rozier chose Charlotte, a team also stuck in no man's land, over the Knicks. Again, as long as Dolan owns that team, the Knicks will be the biggest ongoing tragicomedy in all of sports. So we're going to remember the summer of 2019 as the craziest and most expensive free agency whirlwind in pro sports history. But mostly we're going to remember it for four superstars, Durant and Irving, Leonard and George, opting not for the presumed magnitude of the Lakers and the Knicks, but the challenge of turning the Clippers and the Nets into champions. Somehow, with all the mega millions rolling around despite all of that, I think we're all Clipper fans now. I am. It's nice to see the Wall Street Journal joining me in declaring that Major League Baseball has a home run crisis. Yep, crisis. I have completely lost interest in this laughable flurry of home runs, realizing years ago that so-called commissioner Rob Manfred has diluted the simple thrill of hitting a ball over a fence. We used to love it. Now it happens every other minute. Who cares? As I've said, for the league office to juice baseballs is just as crooked and deceptive as sluggers using steroids. And get this, the sport is on pace for more than 66 home runs this season, almost 1,000 more than were hit back in 2000 at the height of the steroids era. Why are we not condemning the commissioner and the owners for juicing the ball? It's okay that they're cheating, but the players, juicers, Mitchell Report, crooks for life. Sammy Sosa, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, A-Rod. Well, not A-Rod. He is King A-Rod these days. But all these other guys, you know, disgraced. Rob Manfred should be disgraced. You're juicing the ball. And then you're kind of going, we don't know. I mean, that's why I love the fact that future Hall of Fame pitcher Justin Verlander will not let up on the criticism, telling ESPN that the balls are, quote, a bleeping joke, unquote, and that MLB is turning the sport into a joke. Said Verlander of MLB, quote, they own Rawlings, the maker of the baseball, and you've got Manfred up here saying it might be the way they center the pill. They own the bleeping company, and he's not saying bleeping. If any other $40 billion company bought out a $400 million company and the product changed dramatically, it's not a guess as to what happened. We all know what happened. Manfred, the first time he came in, what did he say? He said, we want more offense. All of a sudden, he comes in. The balls are juiced. It's not coincidence. We're not idiots. Quote, unquote. Woohoo! I can't whistle. That's a flaw of mine. I can't whistle. I wish I could. Thank you. There you go. You can't whistle unless your lips are dry. That was a merry audio aside. All right. And yet, Manfred plays dumb. And you've got attendance and TV ratings, they're dropping, and baseball continues its slow slip slide into oblivion, and yet the owners give Manfred an extension. The only reason baseball is not dead is because companies like Fox and ESPN keep bankrolling them. That's it. They need programming. They need inventory. That's it. Someday they're going to get smart and it's going to dry up. But yeah, ESPN needs something to stick on a Tuesday night in the middle of July. So yeah, here's some baseball game in Seattle. Yeah, otherwise they, you know, have a bowling event. That's really what's keeping baseball alive. The owners, though, all they look at is the bottom line. Wow, Rob's growing that bottom line. Wow, look at the revenues. That's because Fox and ESPN are stupid in how they spend their money. I'm glad I can. If I worked there, I couldn't say that. But I don't work at ESPN anymore. Yeah, stupid. I wouldn't be investing in Major League Baseball. I would rather watch a women's soccer league game, and I say that respectfully, than I would a Major League Baseball game with 10 home runs where I'm not even paying attention. By the way, who won Home Run Derby? That would be Pete Alonso, who allegedly hit a ball 469 feet to the opposite field. And if you're gushing over Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Jock Peterson combining for 79 home runs in one round, just realize this. They're hitting super balls or tennis balls. And both their swings could be ruined for the second half of the season. Vlad Jr. hit 91 home runs in one night. One night. Folks, it's a hoax. God love Justin Verlander. As you know, my pet peeve is selectivity when it comes to punishment in athletes. Antonio Brown is somebody who gets away with everything off the field, including a domestic abuse allegation that mysteriously faded away without any investigation. And I hope the Raiders and the National Football League are noticing yet another bizarre off-the-field story. Brown tweeted, and then of course deleted, that he has reached a settlement with the man who sued Brown after he flung a vase, an ottoman, and other pieces of furniture from the 14th floor balcony of a South Florida condo complex, almost hitting a 2-year-old boy to whom the man serves as a guardian. Problem is, this is not how legal settlements work. Taking to Twitter to say Brown is, quote, sorry that an incident occurred, unquote, and that he has agreed to donate, quote, a confidential sum of funds, unquote, to charity. These matters are settled between attorneys, especially when the court filing claimed the child experienced anxiety and had trouble sleeping. I think Antonio Brown, late in the night, decides, yeah, I'm just going to stick this up there. Oops, maybe I shouldn't keep it up there. I'm going to take it down. I guarantee you his lawyer went berserk. An NFL spokesman said the league is closely monitoring the situation. Good! Closely is a big word here. I'm sure HBO's Hard Knocks will be all over this story, and with the Vegas move only months away for the Raiders, when you think about it, I mean, once the regular season is over, they aren't making the playoffs. The moving vans are coming, and they're off to Vegas. That said, I think the odds of Antonio Brown ever playing in Sin City are shrinking, and you may say, oh, Vegas, perfect place for Brown. No, I think if you thought his time in Pittsburgh was crazy, that's Pittsburgh. It's a conservative city in the Rust Belt. Wait till he gets to the Bay Area. Wait until he gets to Oakland. The black hole. Those angry fans. Team moving away. Oh, my God. Antonio Brown suspension over under week 3. Now it's time for the buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And, Chris, what is the ultimate legacy of Megan Rapinoe and the 2019 U.S. women's soccer team?
Jay, congrats to Rapinoe. Congrats to the women's team. It's exciting. It's awesome. They did the tour. They did Good Morning America. They did ESPN today. And in about, 48 hours, nobody will think of them. Maybe the people that are really diehards. What's that? 5,000 people? 10,000 people? I don't mean to be mean. But everyone gets through the excitement. There's not a lot going on in sports when this happened. I mean, at least this past weekend, we were kind of past most of the free agency. Yeah, the Kawhi news. But again, that's got a shelf life of people that are diehard. There wasn't a lot of live sports going on. It's awesome. It's great. But I just don't think that this is going to somehow be a resurgence of soccer love and women's soccer love in this country. It is what it is. It'll be back in the headlines, I guess, if Trump invites them or doesn't invite them to the White House, and that's it.
And Chris, do you expect Rapinoe to get endorsement offers, or will companies shy away from her because A, she ripped into Trump, and B, she has fearlessly embraced being gay, which is an admirable stance, but might not get her the marketing attention she deserves?
I don't see her being very marketable. Again, she's hot in a setting where for 2 weeks people are talking about it, people are watching the games, people are consuming the product, people are excited that she ripped Trump, people are excited that she's gay, people are excited that, again, she's marketable in a social media world where people are angry, people are excited, people want to rally with her or use her as a role model. A few weeks from now, will people remember who she is? You're not going to see her on TV every day. Sports is going to move on. Life is going to move on. And that's just it. And again, the things that she represents, while admirable to people like you and me and many people on the coast, to a lot of other people, they're not role model type characteristics. So I think it's a great story. It's a story we'll point back to. I'm sure it's a story we'll remember for the next Women's World Cup. But for now, it is what it is.
And now that we're embracing the new stunning reality, Chris, Clipper Mania, tell me, can they really win an NBA championship? Or does LeBron quite possibly have the Clippers right where he wants them? Or perhaps, with the East short of title contenders, might this be the year when Giannis and the Bucks, I don't know, win 67 games, beat the Sixers in the finals in the East without much competition in the early rounds, are well rested, and then you got these West teams beating each other up in the postseason?
I think the championship of the NBA is going to come out of the West. I really think there's a great chance that we are seeing Lakers, Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. And I do believe the Clippers have a chance. How can you say they don't have a chance? Kawhi, I mean, listen, PG is another one where he needs to get his head straight. But if he could sort of copy Kawhi, PG, Patrick Beverley, I mean, that team has got some great players. I don't think that the Lakers really measure up when it really comes down to it. But we'll see. Maybe the Clippers don't make it to the Western Conference Finals. Maybe the Lakers don't. Maybe this was all just hyperbole. But I think there's a good chance. And I think there's definitely a chance that Clipper Mania really spreads through L.A. when they win a championship.
Okay, Chris, thanks. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Since the death of his teammate and friend, Tyler Skaggs, Mike Trout has exhibited the meaning of leadership amid grief, launching another home run spree and making mind-boggling defensive plays, including a barehanded catch off the wall. He enters the break with 28 home runs, and yet America will have to enjoy him at the All-Star game because the Angels, sadly, are one game under 500. If Trout somehow lifts this team to the postseason, they should just retire the American League MVP award in his name. These days, baseball's front offices are filled with brainiacs who tout Ivy League degrees and analytical expertise, and they don't have much use for managers, believing those guys in the dugout are expendable at any time. But I think the brainiacs are kidding themselves with no greater proof than the untested and cheap Mickey Callaway, who never should have been hired by the Mets, and now he awaits his firing by the new general manager who never hired him, Brody Van Wagenen, who threw a chair in a recent meeting with Callaway and the coaches. All while the successful Joe Girardi, Mike Socia, John Farrell, all World Series winners, are among those unemployed, soon to be joined by a three-time World Series champion, Bruce Bochy. Seems the brainiacs are morons who are blinded by their analytics. If you wonder why there aren't more harsh critics of baseball such as me, consider the fate of John Smoltz. He was a media darling in his early years at Fox, similar to Tony Romo in his ability to be prescient and simplifying the complexities of the sport. But once Smoltz started attacking the commissioner and the owners and said the game needs dramatic changes, things I have been saying, as you know, day after day, week after week, year after year, oh, the smear campaign against John Smoltz began with the comparatively vapid Alex Rodriguez replacing Smoltz as baseball's so-called broadcasting sage. If you put Smoltz and A-Rod in a room together, A-Rod would be stumbling and bumbling after 30 seconds. John, I didn't know that. Smoltz is brilliant, too brilliant for his own good. Look, John, some advice. Sleeping well at night is far more important than appeasing the Major League Baseball ownership bastards.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
All I have to say is officials at the Los Angeles Marathon had better be damned certain that they are right about Dr. Frank Meza. They disqualified the 70-year-old runner for cheating when they said he left the course and came back from a different position, claiming they have video evidence and an eyewitness report. This after Meza sparked suspicions in the running community by finishing the 26.2 miles in 2 hours, 53 minutes, and 10 seconds, the fastest time ever for a man his age in that event. You know why the L.A. Marathon people better have their facts straight? Days later, after denying the allegations and telling the L.A. Times he thought the marathon was, quote, supposed to be fun, unquote, Meza was found dead in the Los Angeles River. The coroner's office ruled it was death by suicide. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.